Hey, Stillman.
Hey, Dave.
They got the eye and the gold chain. They got the eye and the gold chain.
This is a podcast. It's called Off the Chain. I don't know if it's worth explaining the premise or...
Okay. So Off the Chain is just a fantastic name for anything. I guess what we're trying to do is just find things that are really positive, really interesting, something that's off the chain, and then discuss them. In any given week, any given time, there might be something different or new or cool that's just kind of captivating our attention, what we're thinking about. And it's fun to discuss. And something that's off the chain isn't necessarily going to be discussing world events, politics, or history, or culture. But we're discussing things that we're getting excited about. It's fun to think about. Steele, what do you think being off the chain, what do you think that means?
Wow, something that's off the chain. I guess generally it would be something that you either hadn't encountered before or you encountered and just couldn't forget in some way because it just really thrilled you. It can't be contained. It can't be held. Your exuberance bubbles over. It's off the chain.
Yeah, if something's really off the chain, you're going to find yourself explaining it to someone that doesn't care what you're saying, but you're so excited about it. You understand they're not really listening, but it doesn't matter.
What does it say about a person if most of their conversations are that kind of conversation? Just wondering for a friend.
It probably means that their life is really awesome.
Whew, my friend would be relieved to hear that. So Off the Chain is a lifestyle brand? I mean, if you were, had to put it into two words.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, the branding from this conversation, from these podcasts, we'll move into the clothing industry. I see a lot of baggy pants, kind of with off-the-chain logos, that kind of thing.
Hey, speaking of which, this would be an idea. I needed a new pajama pants, and I was looking on the clearance rack, and I wanted to find something in large. And there was like 50, 60 pairs of like double XLs, but there were two pairs of large pajamas, and I got one of them, and I'm wearing them, and they're kind of gray, plain, nice sweat pant material, except on the left leg, it's got four letters, and each letter has a headband on it in different colors. The letters are TMNT, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, boy.
I know. And here's the thing. They're really comfortable, and it's strange. I like that it's just letters down the left leg, starting at the hip and going to the knee almost. So if we start making off-the-chain baggy pants, you could just have OTC. Now, clearly, we'd have to pretend like we had a different origin story than just stealing it from this Ninja Turtle pajamas, but it's an idea.
So these are Ninja Turtle pajamas, but are there no images of turtles on them?
No. Okay. The letters themselves, they look turtle-esque. They're green with lines, but they could just be like bones or... If you didn't know already what Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles look like and that the bandanas had the color correspondence, there'd be no way of knowing that this was what it was. Just TMNT, man.
I mean, you could work on a different meaning for TMNT if you'd like to. Something positive, you know?
Yeah.
So I just read an Incredible Hulk comic book. That's mostly what I accomplished since I last talked to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the premise?
They trick the Hulk into going into outer space to stop this evil satellite, and then they use that as an opportunity to launch him into deep space. He ends up crash landing on a planet, and he becomes a gladiator on that planet, and he has to fight the entire planet. It's called Planet Hulk. It's fantastic.
So did the planet know that his name was Hulk before he got there, or was that just a great coincidence?
Well, he conquers the planet Steel, so it becomes Planet Hulk. The conquest is really what's the interesting part. He becomes enslaved, he has to fight gladiator battles, and it's kind of along the lines of the plot of the movie Gladiator, except rather than getting killed in the end, Hulk conquers the entire planet.
So, huge spoiler alert, apparently Gladiator dies at the end. Way to go, Dave.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to everybody out there that didn't know that. Have you never seen that one, Steele?
No, I think I did see it, but I don't recall what happened in the end.
poison knife. He gets it, a poison knife is what gets him. So, yeah.
So, in the Hulk, who sends him out into space?
It's Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, Doctor Strange. I believe Black Bolt's involved.
And were they doing him a favor? Was this like a practical joke? Or were they thinking, hey, there's something for him to do out there?
No, it was planet. Kind of like, hey, you know, you always say you just want to be left alone. We're going to shoot you out in outer space where you can just kind of hang out and be left alone.
But they didn't realize there was a planet waiting to be subdued.
Yeah, he ended up going to kind of the wrong planet. They didn't plan it that way, but like the Hulk's, he's pretty mad about the whole situation.
Yeah, I imagine. Thinking you're going out for like a solitary vacation and you end up in a gladiatorial combat situation.
Yeah, but the thing is, he kind of feeds on that still. Like, you know, he always says he wants to be left alone, and that's what he keeps expressing. But in the end, I don't think he really wants to. I think he wants to fight these guys.
Kind of a cry for help.
Yeah, it's like one of my babies, whenever she gets real upset, she runs into the other room. She doesn't want anybody to see her, but she does still. She wants someone to hold her.
Sometimes people that are hiding are just hiding because they want to be found.
Yeah, that's. I'm sure you've written a poem or two about that.
Yeah, or three, man. In my experience, that's about the only subject matter for poems.
But still, I'm going to throw a spoiler alert out there for Planet Hulk. I'm going to tell you the ending because it's going to make you angry.
It's going to make me angry?
Yeah, it made me angry. It makes everybody angry.
Hey, and before you get there, let's just keep them in suspense. Okay. I don't know if you knew this about me, Dave, but when I was a kid, my nickname was Little Hulk because I didn't have a lot of self-expression powers, but I could clench my fists really hard and tense my whole body and like growl and go, and so I was the Little Hulk. I got this great hat when I was probably 2 years old. It was like a trucker hat with the Hulk on the front. So it had a bunch of me looking for Easter eggs, me walking around the neighborhood in my little Hulk hat. We'll have to throw that up on the website for our listeners.
The Hulk, he's always been my most favorite superhero.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, it's not even close. I own like hundreds of Hulk comics. That's pretty much the only comics I own.
Where did the love of the Hulk come from?
Well, so the Hulk, you know, we all know his alter ego is Bruce Banner, kind of this weak, nerdly guy that can't really get anything done. And I've always been a small, weak, kind of nerdly guy. And I always kind of wanted to be able to have the power like the Hulk. So I just really empathize with Bruce Banner. I wish that my temper would allow me to have super strong abilities, but it just doesn't.
So it's straight wish fulfillment. This is like the hero that you wish you could be.
Yeah, I think, like, I had a temper. I think we all did. I had a temper. I was an 8-year-old boy that was the size of, like, a 5-year-old boy, and nothing really happened.
Yeah. Futility. Okay, so we're Planet Hulk. We're ready to spoil the ending here.
Okay, so Planet Hulk. So he conquers the whole planet. Everyone, like, rallies alongside him because they love him. He's fighting the bad guys and all the downtrodden slaves. He's freeing them just because he's the Hulk. He knows how they feel. And so he finally kills the evil Emperor guy. And the evil Emperor guy decides, like, if I'm going down, the whole planet's going down. And he sets a bomb off that divides the whole planet in half. But good news still, the Hulk goes down into the planetary core, brings it back together.
Whoa, he holds the two halves of the planet together.
Yeah, he fuses it back together, and everybody's like, yeah, the Hulk! And it's awesome.
And so how did they know he was doing it? Was it televised?
No, there was television cameras involved. But yeah, they saw him, like the big group of people right around this bomb, like see him go down into the core.
Fearlessly.
Well, he's mad.
Oh, it's angrily.
Never make the Hulk angry. That just makes him stronger. And peace spreads across the world. The Hulk's actually a pretty terrific political leader. Really, the best political system would be a powerful Hulk making all the right decisions, which, like, in the ensuing, like, few pages of the book, he does everything right still.
Yeah, I think Plato's book, Hulkocracy, was about that. Rule by Hulk.
And if you can be ruled by a benevolent Hulk, like, it's really the best way to go. You don't want to have to make the choices you're having to make. Mm-hmm. You'd rather have the Hulk just tell you, like, hey, this is how we're going to do it. Because he's going to do it right.
I think of democracy even as kind of the political version of, I'm hiding so that you can find me. It's like, we're pretending to make these decisions, but really, Hulk, we want you to come in and decide for us.
I'm pretty confident if in the next presidential election it was like Mitt Romney versus the Hulk, and the Hulk's like, hey guys, I'm going to be the emperor, actually. This is what's going to happen. Like, he'd win. But still, because it's a comic book and because it's the Hulk's life, it doesn't just end there. The ship that he was sent from the Earth develops a problem. The warp core begins to melt down.
It's a rental, right? That kind of stuff always happens.
It was poorly made. And this time, the ship blows up. There's nothing the Hulk can do. The planet core is melting. Everyone gets destroyed. And I left out the love story, but of course he found a warrior bride, got her pregnant. The melting down ship explodes, destroys her. The only people that are left are the Hulk and like a handful of his gladiator buddies. He's balancing between this savior, this Christ complex, and this world destroyer complex. In the end, it's basically his fault. His ship destroys the world.
The world that he had just saved and liberated.
Yes.
Oh, man. So what's going to happen next? Is it a cliffhanger ending?
Well, when this came out, I don't know how long ago. This is years old.
Before or after Gladiator, do you think?
It was definitely after. Yeah, these okay. are not original ideas. So fortunately, he and his Gladiator buddies are able to commandeer a spaceship. So the last scene is the Hulk is getting on this spaceship with his Gladiator bros, and they fought together, so they've made this covenant to be war-bound together. And the implication is that they're going to go back to Earth and kill everybody there.
Whoa, this is the Hulk's idea?
He's super angry. He got sent to this planet against his will. He saves the planet. Then the planet blows up because they sent him on a crappy ship. Like, he is angry.
Wow, a lot packed in. And I'm guessing illustrations were vivid. Very emotional.
It was well drawn, well inked, excellent color. Like, I'm excited to read it again.
Hey, so on the topic of well inked, I was reading Edward Tufte's, I think it's called Visualizing Information Excellently or something like that. he's got a bunch of sample data visualizations. And one of them, the y-axis is anger and the x-axis is fear. And it's got 9 pictures of, like, wolves, like a side drawing. And it shows them going from, like, no anger, no fear, to full fear, no anger, to full anger, no fear. And then all the possible combinations in between. Just, like, profile views of wolves expressing, either anger or fear or some combination. So you see, like, the snarl, the eyes, everything's changing based on whether fear is present. And I wonder whether the illustrators of the Hulk comic were aware of this kind of research and put like real facial expressions for the Hulk that were just pure anger, or whether if he's in a really tough situation, whether there's a bit of fear on his face and whether you could match it up.
The thing is, there's only one axis in the graph for the Hulk. There would be no fear. It's be an X or a Y of just anger from, you know, peaceful. He's making love to his sweet alien wife, or, you know, the alien wife has just been blown up and he's very angry. It's there.
So I don't understand the mechanics of Hulk. You got Bruce Banner, and when he gets angry enough, he just transforms. He becomes the Hulk.
Yes.
And it's anger's the switch.
Yes.
How does the Hulk turn back into Bruce Banner?
Throughout the decades, the Hulk was originally created in like the 60s. So there's been all sorts of different things that have happened to the Hulk. So originally it was anger, and then once the Hulk calms down, Bruce Banner comes back. So traditionally, like your cartoons, your Hulk movies, that's basically how it happens. But there's been countless different ways the Hulk transforms. Like day he's Bruce Banner, night he's the Hulk, or sometimes when they get like deep writers in there, it's more like a psychological battle. Whoever has the upper hand stays in control of the body. So during Planet Hulk, the Hulk keeps beating Bruce Banner down, and he just stays Hulk the whole time.
That makes sense. Because I was imagining, he's like furious, he falls in love, like, oh great, I'm not angry anymore, and then all of a sudden he becomes Bruce Banner, and that'd be a little disappointing for his pregnant girlfriend. You're like, I thought I fell in love with the Hulk, who's this kind of impotent weakling? It wouldn't really be fair.
No, but a part of their, they actually got married. So during the wedding ceremony, which was alien and, you know, radical, it was just the two of them, and the Hulk revealed his Bruce Banner self to her.
He was capable.
Yeah, he did it. He allowed, because he has the psychological advantage over Banner at this time. Yeah. And so he showed her, and, you know, she's just like, okay, well, let's do this. We're in love.
Let that be a lesson to all of us, really. No secrets. You got to be yourself. You got to tell your alien bride who you really are.
No, yeah, imagine if you held back in one day, like, you know, the psychological battle, Banner's got the advantage. They wake up, and she's next to Bruce Banner. She's like, what is going on? She's probably going to kill Bruce Banner.
Possibly. It's like beneath the skin was a lizard skin. You know, imagine that. Wow, how?
Oh, man. Everything you say, there's pop culture references coming into my mind. I got mid-1980s TV series in my mind. It's all there still. It all connects. Yeah, it's an interplanetary love affair. It's about unity. I don't know. You just want to build things together, build things up. It's not about tearing stuff down, unless, of course, you're the Hulk.
But even then, he's not trying to destroy stuff, or is he?
No, well, in Planet Hulk, he had to tear down this evil empire and this terrible gladiatorial combat system so that he could free the slaves. So he had to destroy, but, you know, the intention was destroy in order to build up.
He's got the long-term vision.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, it's all fueled by anger, which...
Yeah, anger just really leads to wise long-term decision-making.
We still have this metal garbage can from when we first got married, and I don't remember why I got real mad, but I got real mad and I kicked it. So it has this dent that's been in there for like 7 or 8 years, and I always, like, anytime I see the garbage can, I'm like, oh jeez. Yeah.
Well, congrats.
Yeah. So there's one, I had an idea for a game that I wanted to play with you. I know that you probably don't watch a lot of bad action movies. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's totally accurate. I don't watch a lot of movies full stop. I would say documentaries. That's about like the... If you want to know anything about obscure documentaries, I'd probably win that quiz.
Okay. So the game that I'd like to play is I really enjoy bad action movies. It's something that brings me a lot of joy. And recently I watched one that I really enjoyed. Name of the movie is Nonstop. It's a bad action movie, and it stars Liam Neeson. Have you heard of this movie?
I have not.
Okay, perfect. So the game is, Steele, I want you, just from those things, to tell me what you think is happening in this film.
Okay, so the film opens. It's like kind of a slow pan, and Liam Neeson, he's in a business meeting, and he looks really perplexed. He's got his finger on his temple. He's looking down, looking around. Just the stress is mounting. And it's like a board meeting. So big glass windows everywhere, fancy leather chairs. The executive board's all there. And Liam Neeson's just getting more and more distressed. And then at some point, he just stands up, leaps over the table, and heads out the door. Some music starts playing. And Liam Neeson's just like flying through an office building, downstairs, out in the street. And then the title credit comes up and it says Nonstop. And for like the first hour of the movie, he's just frantic, going places and doing stuff. And no one's really sure what he's doing or where he's going because there's no dialogue. Yeah. Like there's dialogue in the sense of like he gets into a taxi and he says 47 North Rockefeller Street. And the taxi goes there. But other than that, it's just in scene, just trying to get somewhere.
So he's traveling towards something. Is there any violence happening, or he's just...
Oh, yeah.
He's getting stuff together.
He's not looking for violence, but violence is happening. Like, for example, driving... He's in his own car at this point. Mm-hmm. And there's a big construction crew that's trying to set up on the street that he needs to get to. And he's like, I'm not having this. So he just drives through it. And he's like kicking garbage cans over. There's probably more action. I don't remember. Finer points.
And do you have in your mind like a goal that he's working towards?
Well, slowly, I mean, it becomes clear. Like you get little pieces. But it's kind of a detective story in a way. And you're the detective as the viewer. Very conceptual. It's not exactly like Memento, because it's not happening in reverse chronological order, but you're getting pieces as the thing goes. Different stuff happens. At one point, he has to do some swimming, and it's impromptu, and it's a very tight fit. It's like a sewage tunnel.
Mm.
It's well lit, everything, because it's movies, but he has to dive in and squeeze through, so he pulls his shirt off. And when he pulls his shirt off, you see a couple of tattoos, right? And the tattoos reveal part of his character. You learn something about him and his relationships from the tattoos. But it's only revealed if you're paying careful attention.
And the good thing about what you're putting out there is Neeson can play this. Like, you're going to see a lot of emotion from him. You're going to learn a lot just from his face. Something's going on. I don't know what it is, but I want Neeson to figure this out.
Yeah, and it's 45 minutes gone before you even learn that Liam Neeson is South African. That's the crazy part.
Oh, man.
Because he doesn't talk that much. I mean, it really is action. Very little dialogue.
And in reality, I don't know what nationality Liam Neeson is.
It's true, just like the film.
I can't place his accent. I don't know where he's from. I just, whatever country it is, I love it because he came from it.
Yeah, and I don't remember what happened for the several hours that came after. It was a pretty long film, if I recall.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty close. Number one, it is off the chain because at this point in his career, any Liam Neeson movie is off the chain. That's something we just need to know. So Nonstop opens with he's in a car, brooding. Like, there's something in his life that's not right.
See, I knew it.
And it's obvious from the get-go he's an alcoholic. He's drinking.
Oh.
But still, he gets on a plane. It's revealed that he is an air marshal, and he's on this plane to protect the plane.
But who's going to protect the plane from Liam Neeson? I mean, that's the question with alcoholics, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you how it gets good.
Okay.
So there's one other air marshal on this plane. I don't know how many air marshals there are in the United States and how many undercover ones are on planes, but this one had two.
Yeah.
The other guy, kind of long hair, in his 50s, seems like the kind of guy that would do cocaine and hit on your wife.
Jeff Bridges.
Not as handsome. Just some dude. When it's a Liam Neeson movie, you don't need any other actors. So he gets a text message just a few minutes into the flight saying, if you don't get $50 million transferred to this account in the next 20 minutes, someone on this plane is going to die.
So can people actually text on airplanes? Huh. I didn't think you could. I thought you had to turn your phones off.
Well,
a plot hole.
I can fill that hole right now. This is a Liam Neeson movie. No plot holes allowed. He's a U.S. Air Marshal, so he's got this special phone that's on a special network. And so that's why his phone works. And someone on the plane has hijacked and got onto this network so that he could threaten Liam Neeson. Within 20 minutes, he gets into a confrontation with the other air marshal, and Liam Neeson strangles the guy to death in the bathroom on the plane. He gets another text message saying, see, what'd I tell you?
Well, that's the end of the movie?
No.
Okay, so the first text message said what?
$50 million wired to this account, or in the next 20 minutes, someone's going to die. And essentially the threat was every 20 minutes of this flight that he doesn't get the money, someone on the flight's going to die. And what you think initially is like, okay, so this guy's going to murder someone. But no, he's playing mind games. He gets Liam Neeson to kill the first guy.
Wow. That's a little better script than the one that I was just describing.
No, yeah, this is blowing yours away. The thing is, you missed the leap to the plane. If you could have connected the title to the plane, I think you would have really gone to some good places.
Because Nonstop, that's a reference to direct flight between two locations. It doesn't have a layover.
Yeah, and I have no idea what the locations in this film were, and I don't care. It doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah, and it just keeps escalating. Eventually, everyone on the plane thinks that Liam Neeson is hijacking the plane. There's passengers on the plane trying to fight Liam Neeson, and he's trying to figure out who's the terrorist that's doing this. And Liam Neeson ends up killing like two more people. It just keeps escalating, and the whole time Liam Neeson is trying to put this puzzle together. Plus, he's an alcoholic, so he's drinking.
And in the end, is it just some kid, like a 12-year-old?
No. I'm going to spoil it for you, Steele, because I don't think you're ever going to watch this movie.
Very true.
In the end, it's a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces that served in Iraq. He went and served there because he was inspired by 9/11. He wanted to protect the country, but because of things that he experienced, he felt like the country wasn't being protected, and he wanted to show people how the country isn't safe. That's why he's hijacking this plane. He wants to show them they're not safe. We got to do things to make this country safe.
Sounds convincing.
It's really flawless thought process, logical. So, of course, crash land, Liam Neeson kills him. But at some point during the movie, the $50 million did actually get wired to this account. And the account was in Liam Neeson's name because this military dude's trying to make Liam Neeson look like he's the crazy guy. So it ends with Liam Neeson like almost winking at the camera like, hey, I got $50 million. And there's a babe on the plane that he kind of connects with. And he's kind of like, hey, let's get out of here. I'm going to stop drinking alcohol. I got $50 million. What do you want to do?
That's one way to kick an addiction.
Yeah, in my personal experience, I'm a nurse, Steele. You just throw money at an addiction, it's going to go away.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I mean, you murder a couple of people, make a few million, and pretty much all your psychological problems will be solved.
So, intense movie. Off the Chain, yes. Best movie I've seen this year? Yes.
Wow. Now, when you say this year, you mean 2015 or 2014 as well?
Oh, yeah, let's say 2015 because that works a little better. That makes that statement a little more believable.
Yeah.
So do you have anything that you've been thinking about lately that you want to bring to the table?
Yeah.
Okay.
I listen to a lot of music. Something that I would say is particularly off the chain is the music of Damian Jurado. This guy is probably my favorite living singer-songwriter. He's from Seattle and put out probably 10 to a dozen records. And I had always wanted to see him live, but I had never been able to see a concert, so I've been following his music and really enjoyed it for years. I came to Madison last year, and Laurel, my wife, was about 7 or 8 months pregnant. So I was thinking, oh, it'd be really great to go, but it's winter and my wife's super pregnant. I don't know if we're really up for it. But I asked her and we talked about it. She's like, yeah, let's do it. So we went with a couple friends. In our minds, it was like our baby's first concert because he's in utero and he can hear everything. Uh-huh. And it was this great, wonderful show. He plays a bunch of songs. It's just him. He tells a bunch of stories. And then he does this thing where he's like, okay, anybody have any questions that they want to ask me? And like people just asked him real questions and he took them and told stories and it was incredible. Someone asked him about the story of his new record and he told about this really elaborate dream and this. It was like a 10-minute story that was super heartfelt and very moving, and we're like, wow, this is great. And afterwards, we went up. I introduced my super pregnant wife and said, hey, this is our baby's first concert. This song really means a lot to us, and we played at our wedding. And he appreciated it and said, thanks so much. We just found out he's coming back to Madison next month. We bought tickets to the show, so it's going to be basically our first outing in the year since our son has been born. And it's going to be to go see the guy that we saw right before he was born.
That's cool.
It's off the chain, man.
It is off the chain. So you've been following him for a long time. What about his music? Is it just you like his voice or the songs, the melodies?
I do like his voice. He's incredibly sad, and I love really sad music.
Uh-huh.
A lot of songs about depression, I think.
Yeah, that's top of my list too, yeah.
I don't know how to say it, but he seems like a really honest songwriter. Great turn of phrase, nice voice. He's a collector of interesting things, interesting ideas, interesting stories. of human sadnesses, and he tells them with empathy.
Recently, it's been an issue with me is honesty in the songwriting. And it's kind of weird, but when I feel like someone's not being genuine in how they're coming across in their music, I don't like it. So I like when I feel like this artist is really putting their heart into it.
Oh, for sure. The song that was really meaningful for Laurel and I is a song called Beacon Hill.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to be this story of a person who's kind of checked into a psychological facility with suicidal thoughts and ideation. And it's a really sweet song. And the chorus is, if you return to me, I will return to you kind of thing. And it's a broken people trying to love and hold on to each other. And I think in some ways, Laurel and I really related to the protagonists and wanted that for ourselves. Not to be broken, but to be holding on to each other.
It reminds me, years ago, like when we were just young men, Steelman, you introduced me to Clem Snide. You know that song, Your Favorite Music, and the song's Your Favorite Music, It Just Makes You Sad. And like, I love that. I want, it's great when a song makes you feel an emotion, even if it's sadness. Yeah, I'm up for it.
Yeah, and I feel like these songs aren't trying to make you sad. It's often about sad things, but the world is full of sad things, and we want to see them, face them, and still live.
Beautiful.
So check that out. There's an album called Maricopa that's really great, and his brand new album's called Brothers and Sisters of the Eternal Sun.
But the song Beacon Hill, is that your favorite song, or just the one that you felt connected to, or what?
Probably favorite. I really like Museum of Flight, uh-huh. And I like Working Titles as well. Those are probably my top three. Okay. I mean, there's so much. Can't go wrong.
Well, as we were talking, I just added a couple of those songs to my Spotify thing, so I'm ready. I'm going to listen to it tomorrow.
Hey, Dave, this has been Off the Chain. I've got a baby that's calling me.
Okay.
Anything you want to go out with?
No, I think that was good. I'm happy to talk again, find out more things that are off the chain. There's tons. Every week there's something awesome that we can talk about, you know?
Thanks, Dave.
All right. See you still.